Welcome to Read This Comic Before You Die, the podcast where we help you put together the greatest comic book collection, probably. In each episode, we present a comic or graphic novel that we feel deserves a place in your collection. Stick with us and we'll transform your life, help you earn the respect of your peers, and give you a collection of books that would make Ron Burgundy himself jealous.
Right.
Welcome to another episode of our podcast. You've come back for more.
You sound surprised.
I am. I'm permanently surprised.
We've come back because we're actually hosting it, so we have to come back.
You've come back because it's your house.
Well,
you
there
never
is that.
Left.
No, that's true.
I just thought of a brilliant introduction to the show.
Oh, yeah?
Cool.
Yeah. It's, I can't remember the year, but it's the Guess Who? They go, dinner.
American Vampires!
They wait for me! This week, we're talking about American Vampire. We should probably have a spookier introduction than that. Like,
I don't know. Yeah, it works.
This week, we're talking about
Sesame Street.
American Vampire. Which is like, but they're not Transylvanian. They have skateboards. This week, we are talking about American Vampire. It is one that we've all read and never really discussed with each other before. So this could be interesting.
Yeah.
Would you refer to it as Scott Snyder's American Vampire?
I think it's a Scott Snyder. He's the guy who came up with the idea, sort of had all of the roadblocks. Roadmap.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. He had the roadmap in place for the character of Skinner Sweet and what he wanted to explore with the character, and most particularly when he wanted to explore with the character.
No, this...
Skinner Sweet.
Yeah, this is key.
So he had all this in place and then he got Stephen King. So him and Stephen King actually go back further than I thought.
Yeah, I didn't know this.
Snyder's come out and said, like, Stephen King, reading him as a kid, sort of jump-started his love of storytelling, which is... And then he wrote a few short stories and Stephen King actually picked some of the stories that he wrote to win a competition. And then later on, you know, throughout the years, Snyder had this idea for a comic book. And these worlds collided, and Stephen King and Scott Snyder got to work together on American Vampire. So I think Snyder wrote the first issue, and then Stephen King wrote like a couple of the introductory ones. Certainly a lot of the first volume of
I think it is just the first one.
Yeah.
It explains then, because in the afterward, Snyder's talking about the team, and he mentions Steve. And I was like, that's a bit informal, a bit chummy.
If I could reach a point in my life where I was calling Stephen King Steve.
Or K-Dog.
Oh, love, babe.
But yeah, like, Snyder is a name you're going to hear several times across the run of this podcast. He's pretty good. He's Mr. Comics at the moment.
We did a run on Batman.
He'd certainly credited with giving DC a big shot in the arm with the New 52.
Yeah.
He led that charge. Or he's certainly perceived to have done so.
Yeah, it's definitely a run. I mean, it wasn't particularly my favourite. There was some good stuff in it, but... I think out of all the New 52 stuff, it's probably the most consistent.
Yeah.
A lot of the other runs were kind of all over the shop.
Yeah.
So we should always give a shout out to the artist as well, Raphael Albuquerque as well.
Yes, a name that I struggled to write down, I'm not going to lie. But yeah, no, I think the thing I love about his art most of all is how scratchy it feels. I think that's the word I would use to describe it. American Vampire is not... I mean, like, even in the intro to the first book, the one that, so Stephen King's writing about it, and he's like, I don't want to have vampires that shimmer, like Twilight vampires. I don't want this overly romanticized Anne Rice vampires.
Yeah.
He wants violent as hell vampires, and I think Raphael Albuquerque's artwork just reflects that so well, because... Not only in the bits where the vampires sort of look human,
yeah,
because there is still sort of this quality about the drawings that just make you feel slightly uneasy.
I think the colouring as well, because they look a bit, obviously got the kind of pasty look.
Mm.
One thing we probably should say before I go on to talk about the art again was, so the first five issues are in the first collection, and you've got Snyder's, I was gonna say set in the modern day, but it's not, it's set in the 1920s, and then the other strip is set in the late 19th century with Skinner Sweet's origin, which is written by Stephen King.
Yes.
So what I didn't realise until about the third issue was it's the same artist, but he's adopted a different style.
Yeah.
Which I thought was...
Mind-blowing.
Brilliant. Yeah, really, really good. So you've got cleaner lines in the 20s, and it's all kind of grimier and...
It's a clever boy.
He was using different ink washes as well, so...
Oh, that's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, I guess the thing with American Vampire, I mean, mostly we can't spoil too much of the story for you, otherwise why would you buy it? It was the year of our Lord, 2010, and we were crying out for a vampire story. True Blood had been, and kind of went downhill really quickly. Do you remember how excited everyone was that True Blood was coming? True Blood was going to be the next big thing.
Was True Blood HBO?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I watched I think I tapped out on the last season. The few before that were kind of...
I watched the first couple.
Unravelling. Yeah,
remember that theme song was great.
That's maybe the best thing about it. Apart from the way the bill goes, sucker.
They got married and had kids in real life, which I think is really sweet.
I thought True Love was a good series. It had some great moments in it. Old Skarsgård was... That kind of...
Okay, he was good, but for me, the series never really did what I wanted it to. Like, we had a tease of it when, like, Bill's coming out of, like, Suki's Grand's history meet, and they were like, oh, thank you for coming and telling us what it was like to be a soldier in the Civil War. And I was like, that is the... I don't know why I went Christopher Walken there. That is the series I want. Like, that's the vampire story I want, and... True Blood didn't really deliver.
No, it went a bit fancy, didn't it? They had like elves and whatnot.
Yeah. Well, literally
fairies. Fairies,
it was a fairy in the end.
Yeah.
Spoilers.
Oh, wow.
I mean, there's the problem with vampire stories and the problem with all comics ever is it's all been done before. But we sort of diverged from when vampire stories used to be good. We talked off camera, off mic, about things like Lost Boys.
Yeah.
By Stereo.
Okay, maybe not that good, but like they were cool for a while, and we lost that.
Yeah, and I mean,
I think I blame Twilight, right?
That's the thing. Like everyone does blame Twilight, and I think it's just because not necessarily the Twilight ruined vampires, but Twilight popularized the worst of vampires. I feel.
Was that all kind of like tortured, introspective?
It wasn't just that. It was
and
just
like immortal.
This...
It's such a pain in the ass.
Oh, it's so annoying. No, it was. It was. The problem with Twilight is it's mostly an adolescent girl's fantasy to have an older boy who cares about nothing but her, who'll protect her, but he's somehow unobtainable, and yet she obtains him. But then ultimately she has to change herself completely to become... You know what, like, Twilight is actually... not as bad as everyone gives it credit for. If you watch Lindsay Ellis's very good... I love her. I will talk about her all the time. She did a very good video essay about why everyone was kind of overly harsh to Twilight.
Interesting.
I remember reading it at the time.
I did not expect someone to be sticking up for
Twilight. No, I don't. Like, I remember reading it at the time and just, like, I was sort of the perfect age for it, I guess you'd say. So I didn't mind it so much. But if you think about Twilight in the broader context of vampires, it is the big black spot, I would say.
I'm struggling to think of anything vampire-related other than that in the sort of recent age. You've had the comedy, What We Do in the Shadows, which combined all different types of vampire.
Before that, it was probably From Dusk Till Dawn.
Yep.
Mm. And that, they tried to follow up and crashed so hard. Do you know, before I moved down here, I was a bit of a vampirologist. I was a bit of a fat Scottish girl.
I thought you were going to say you were a vampire hunter, and I'd be like,
amazing.
Once in every generation.
Yeah, like, I definitely had a year or two where I was like, I fucking love all things vampires.
How many times did you watch Queen of the Damned?
You don't rate it at all.
You really?
The problem is I tried to read it. I could only get through the movie of Interview with a Vampire, and I tried to read the follow-up, and because that was the thing,
it was Anne Rice.
That was it, like, we were trying to get into, or I was leading a solo charge of trying to get into vampire fiction, there was Anne Rice, I tried Poppy Zebright, just found her kind of impenetrable, but, like, if you go back far enough, like, there used to be a couple of vampire-themed magazines that you could be able to get from, like, a comic shop.
Yeah.
Bite Me was one of them. I don't remember the name of the other one. I think it was called Bloodstone. And there's like, if you fish out an old... I think it was, like, maybe the first issue of Bite Me, there's like a fan letter from me going like, thank God someone has come along and taken vampires seriously. It doesn't all have to be boobs and blood, you know. This is dead serious, huh? No pun intended. So I was really into my vampires.
So I'm just like stunned. This is a side of you I've never heard of before.
This is like a Vice article.
I told you I was a fat Scottish goth. Like, I wasn't kidding. I was heavily into the vamp, the big vamp.
Vamp life.
The big V life.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, no. And I think that I may have actually still had my V badge at the time. It would make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Did. Yeah. But yeah, I'll dig that out for you the next time I go to Scotland. So yeah, like, we all grew up, we all had vampire movies. You must have had some choice Hammer vampire moments.
Are you saying that because I'm old?
No, I'm just thinking of like the Twins of Evil and something. Got strange feelings in my tummy again.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm actually old enough to have been in the cinema when Lost Boys first came out.
Amazing.
It was like opening night and it was like there was nothing else on. Went to go and see it. And I kind of identified with it because...
You identified with Kiefer?
No, the Frog Brothers work at a comic shop, and for me that was like, that's so cool.
Oh my god.
And they're vampire hunters.
What was it like at the time, like seeing it like before it became a cult hit?
I remember sitting with one of my friends at school and we were raving about it and no one was like, I need to go and see that. It was one of those things where about a year later it was on video and then it started building up. And the soundtrack, actually, I remember the soundtrack was like the big thing to have.
Thou shalt not kill.
Yeah, I wore out that cassette tape big time. That's actually how I got into the Doors, because it was a cover song.
I was totally going to say that. For years, and like, this was like before you had ready access to like CDs and everything, and I remember trying to get the Doors for ages, and I'm like, People Are Strange, it doesn't sound right. And of course it was Echo and the Bunnymen soundtrack. Like, damn it! But I didn't learn it.
Linking back to comics, so at that time, I think I had some old reprints of like Tomb of Dracula, but vampire comics weren't really a thing.
Being gone.
Yeah, right? Late 80s, and they were very much like generic spins on Bela Lugosi. So there was a comic I read, which I know I mentioned to you before, called Scream, which was a weekly comic that kind of got cancelled in 20 issues. My mum banned me from
buying. This is the way to sneak into the house.
I had to sneak into the house, yeah. And there was a strip in there called The Dracula Files.
Brilliant.
Which was set in modern day, as in 1985.
Oh.
And it was the classic slick back hair, cloak, and Dracula's come back.
Mm.
And he's in London, he's like rampaging through 80s costume parties and dining on bankers and stuff. They actually collected it in a book recently. So it was quite fun. But that's kind of, for me, that was vampires until I saw Lost Boys and I realised there's a whole world.
There's more to vampires.
This is totally just reminding me, I have a porn buying analogy. But funny enough, it fits into our Superman podcast, which is coming up probably next in the order of release.
Yes.
Remind me when it comes to Superman buying porn. It all fits back into vampires, I promise you. I just had this incredible flashback of like, why don't you take vampires so seriously? And I remember what got me into it was probably 95 Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yeah.
Which is just cheese. And the dollhouse in Fort Lauderdale.
Actually, no, it was earlier than that, I think.
Was it really?
Because they were, I think it must have been 93, 93, because then they did Frankenstein with Kenneth Branagh in 94, 95. I was working at Star Wild West. Indeed. I was working at a cinema at the time, I remember that coming out.
Yeah.
I think they were trying to reboot like the Universal Monsters, and I think Frankenstein stalled it.
I was going to say.
Biffed it.
Dracula did alright in the box office. It hasn't aged particularly well.
It's bad. It was bad.
That is like ITV4 fun.
Yeah.
But it was so good.
Well, I loved it when it came out, and I remember that was actually when I was working in a comic book shop, and Topps Comics, who did a Bubblegum Cards, were doing a series of licensed comics. They were doing Mars Attacks, and they did an adaptation of Dracula, which I've still got it now, wish I had it, was illustrated by Mike Mignola, who then went off to do a little-known character called Hellboy.
Never heard of him. Back in his board game.
Yeah, so I had loads of, like, Mignola Dracula T-shirts and stuff, because I was, like, I was, like you, at that time, I was the big V, you know. So.
You're a vampire.
Yeah. Yes. That's
what they We got better. They killed the head vampire. Killed the head vampire, and we all got better.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Buffy came out. Maybe.
I wanted to like Buffy. For some reason, I mean, you're totally right. Buffy took the baton and ran with it, but for some reason, I don't know, I think I might have been too snobby at the time. I might have still been like, oh my god, it's not got Keanu Reeves in it, so it can't be a serious vampire movie. It's not got Anthony Hopkins literally chewing the scenery. And I think it was Oldman off the back of Leon, where just like everyone in the entire film has just turned up to like
ham it up. It's like that Whitest Kids You Know sketch. Have you seen it? What is it? Try Smiler. Smiling, happier, and it's but they're like doing a detective scene and they're like, oh, she was killed and like stabbed through the heart. No, do it happier, bigger smile.
Brilliant.
That sums the whole thing up. It's just, oh, I really need to rewatch it. Maybe I'll just start trudging around town in a cape again. It'll all come back.
Oh my God.
Like a snap back into the habit. But yeah, but you're right. Buffy was like a huge phenomenon, and I was aware of it. I think it was, it's kind of hard for some listeners maybe, but it was before the age of like readily available DVDs and stuff.
Yeah.
So you literally had to wait every Friday, 6 o'clock for some Buffy.
BBC Two?
Yeah.
I think so. I got into it quite late. I think I got into it in season 3. I remember it was coming back from a pub on a Friday night, and it'll be rerun like about midnight on BBC Two.
Yeah.
So I got into it from there. And then became like a massive fan. And
I remember watching it after school with my mates. There was a one in particular who was like obsessed with it, and that's how she got us all started onto it. But then Buffy, I never became like massively obsessed with it. A friend of mine was really, really into sort of the whole Whedon verse, and became obsessed with Angel. She actually bought.
Yeah.
You know that episode of Angel?
It was the better series.
When he gets turned into a puppet.
Yes.
She bought the replica puppet.
Yeah.
The smile sign.
I would argue it's a better series. But actually, funny enough, again, this is not me just tenuously linking it back to comics, but Buffy...
We probably should talk about that.
Well, no, yeah, but I think, you know, if anyone who's kind of... Well, you'll know this because, like, you're a massive X-Men fan. Mm. So, you know, during one of the seasons, there was a clear homage to the Dark Phoenix saga where Willow goes bad.
Oh, yeah, well, Willow...
And in interviews, he actually said that. He was like, you know, one of his influences was Claremont and Burns' run on Dark Phoenix.
Wow. I never even pulled that connection together.
There you go. Boom.
So much
boom.
Sense.
I guess it's all been worth
boom.
While. Boom. Boom. Let's get back to American Vampire.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
It's really great. So we talked about, like, it does the dual timelines thing. We're only really going to talk about, like, the first volume because... goes
spoilers
places.
It's what I like is that it take again, it's nothing new necessarily in vampire comics, but it just takes this theme of like, what if vampires started to evolve, which I really liked, and you've got this dichotomy between the old vampires and the new and how they interact,
and it felt like something new, which I think I hadn't seen before.
Yeah, because it kind of focuses, you have like the screen time, as it were, of like the old European vampires are set in their ways.
Yeah, they're the classical vampires,
classic.
Right? Yeah.
They all have like accents, they all have to stay out of the sun, they don't like wooden stakes, that kind of thing. And then you've got the brand new American vampires, and it's done in a really cool way where they're sort of like, not only is it like a different type of person who are being turned, because it's like obviously a few hundred years since the European guys got turned, but it's also kind of takes into account the environment that they're in. Like Skinner Sweet's his fangs are more like rattlesnakes rather than like the big chunky ones that you'd expect from like the European guys, and they have like different powers
because he can walk around the sun, can't he?
Around the sun, and his weakness is not a wooden stake, it is a I'm not going to tell you actually. There's different but it's not just Skinner's story either. What's really cool is that he's been around in this dual timeline thing. He's been around for a few decades at this point. He knows what he's doing.
40, 50 years, I think it right there. Yeah.
And for some unknown reason, so he's like a bandit, he's an outlaw, he just does whatever the hell he wants.
Yeah.
So he's like the cool, mysterious guy in that regard. He, for some unknown reason, turns a younger girl called Pearl who wants to become an actress. It's like the golden age of Hollywood.
Which I love as well. That anything set in that era, I get, you know, all over.
It's
like the same. Like I mentioned before, like the Fade Out by Brubaker and Phillips, that's set in that kind of era as well, the golden age of Hollywood.
And it's kind of like, so part of it is this big overarching story about the old vampires versus the new, but part of it is their relationship, which is unravels, you would say, like, throughout the comics and throughout the series. And this is really interesting to see, like, the two perspectives on it.
You don't get much of that in the first one. I think you just get you get it set up, don't you?
He literally just turns around and goes, "All right, I'll let
see
you. Yeah. I'll let you figure it out, and then
yeah.
leave.
See you in a few issues."
Yeah, but it's not. To be honest, it's like it's one of those things where a lot of the times comics are quite impenetrable. Like we were talking about this with the X-Men one. It's like you try to come into X-Men now, and you're like, "Oh my god!"
Yeah.
If something like American Vampire, and like stuff like Saga, Rat Queens, that kind of thing.
Mm.
You can just pick it up because it is newer.
Yeah.
There's not as much of it, and it's not relying on you knowing every character's backstory or every character's powers or whatever. You can just come into it and just sort of enjoy the story. That's what I really like about it. And it's really well written, and it's Stephen King.
I like that America really isn't that old, and it gets to just play with history very well. And
yeah.
Like even for like a history buff, there's a lot in there. Like Skinner's nemesis is working for like the Pinkerton.
Yeah.
And he's tracking him down. I'm like, oh, I know all about that stuff. Oh, I'm a history buff. It was nice. It's like it just revels in its own Americana,
yeah.
as it should do. Hence the title.
Mm.
So there's a lot in there for me as well.
No, it's cool. And again, going back to what I said earlier about it does new stuff with vampires. Because I'm reading the foreword by Stephen King and the notion they were gonna the notion they want to do something new with it. And I was like, yeah, but what new stuff can you do with vampires? And they kind of pull it off.
Yeah.
One of the little tricks, which I don't think I've seen before, is they do a different spin on the mirror reflection. So not previously, it's like vampires don't have a reflection. This one, it's like a hall of mirrors distortion. Which I, reading that and seeing that, I was like, you know what? I'd love to see this as a TV show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the TV show we wanted.
Yeah.
We didn't get, but
we got True Blood.
Yeah. If you feel jaded by True Blood, this is what we're saying. Like this
the
is
the antidote.
Yeah, this is the antidote to all that. If you wanted your cool vampire story, here it is.
And also if you're a fan of something like Westworld as well, or like sort of period dramas, because it's kind of got, well, it's got everything, because it's got the kind of Wild West era. This volume one's got the 1920s.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't read the second, or for, no, you have, but they jump to the 30s and 40s, don't they, I think. So.
They move forward in time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really cool. And it's mega, mega violent.
Oh, yeah.
Which is almost a plus podcast.
No, it's sort of like, I'm really glad they didn't skimp out on that, because it sort of would feel unauthentic, I think. Because, and it's not just violence as well, it's like all different, it gets like dark at times and relentless when it comes to that subject matter. But the characterization sort of leads you through it, and it is very good. I really enjoy it. Eisner Award winning.
Also, I was going to say that Skinner Sweet is not a particularly likable character.
He's not
a good guy.
No, he's not
at all. He's not tortured. He's not like, oh, I'm a vampire. Oh,
no.
I'm trying to do right. He's like, you know, I'm enjoying this. I'm a complete arsehole.
He's kind of like.
You're going to see Sawyer from Lost, aren't you?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Too deep. You're
getting pulled down the rabbit hole.
That would be good casting.
I'm getting Baader Meinhof'd by Sawyer from Lost.
Ooh.
Because there's the revelation that came out today that he was almost cast as Gambit in X-Men Origins Wolverine. So I'm getting Baader Meinhof'd by Josh Holloway. No, but he is ultimately a really unlikable character. So you find yourself interested in him, but you latch on to Pearl.
Mm.
Mm.
Because she's like the ingenue, the naive girl. But then at the same time, the way that they both change and grow and move through the story is very compelling and very interesting.
Yeah.
And it's very good.
Is it a finite series? Is it done?
Still
going.
Because there's been a long gap, I guess, between.
Yeah, because Snyder's been doing, Batman, Justice League, Superman. He's still working on it. I am actually amazed that there hasn't been some announcement of an adaptation for the screen, because it just lends itself very well to it.
It really does. So, yes, there we go. A Vampire Tale for the Ages, about the ages.
Check it out.
Yeah, I know. Right now.
There's loads of collected editions. It's also available digitally as well, so there's no excuse.
If you want a little cheat that we discovered, if you buy on Amazon and get the Kindle version, you can import it into Comixology, and 9 times out of 10, it's cheaper.
Yeah, I got it for half the price, actually. So.
It's very bizarre, because Amazon owns Comixology, But there you are.
Yeah, it works.
There's a workaround for you.
Don't tell them. Don't tell them that we know the loophole.
It's between us girls.
So there we go. That's American Vampire. Let us know if you've read it. Let us know if you liked it. What are your thoughts? What are your other favourite comic book movies and comics about vampires?
Mm.
Let us know what the usual address is. If you want to find us on Twitter, you can find me at Neil Gortz with a Z.
I'm at Lucy James Games.
And I'm at Stoonami.
All right. Until next time. See you later.
Bye.
American Vampire. Stay away from me. We should get done recording.
American Vampire.